Star Tribune's Prep Sports Podcast is brought to you by Becker Furniture World, Franzen Bank and Trust, Menards, and Carrier.
Cool. And welcome back to the Star Tribune Talking Preps Podcast. I'm David Levake with Jim Paulson. Jim, it's really been a string of nice days, kind of cool temperatures, very fall-like, very football. And yet we don't have any outlet for those things. And how are you doing with all this?
This weekend, Thursday and Friday would be the opening weekend of high school football. And we're definitely gonna feel that loss. I'm pretty sure. I was looking at the schedule today and seeing who would be playing this weekend. What the games we'd be looking at would be. Totino Grace and Lakeville South would be playing Thursday night. Wyzetta would be playing at Blaine. You know, Lakeville North would have Woodbury. So we'd have, Osseo and Crete and Durham Hall. So we'd have, games to look forward to. Eden Prairie and, Roseville. But there'd be games to look forward to. Rosemount and Prior Lake would have been a good one coming up Thursday. So there's a lot of good football we're going to be missing this weekend. I'm just turning my eye towards March, and that's March always says football to me.
Yeah, that'll be strange. If we have winter tournaments, and you can't say anything with any certainty anymore, but if we have winter tournaments, then we got football starting right on top of that. It's usually the other way around. I've been at prep bowls in the past where I've been making my final calls to be up to speed as possible on boys hockey, and now it'll be reverse. You'll be at the boys hockey tournament potentially and putting the finishing touches on our football preview coverage. Very, very strange.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, this weekend would have been the unofficial start to the season, because we still have 0 week games. We still have a few of those, and those would have already come and gone. I think those are good for the teams that need them. But as far as everybody else and the bulk of the attention and the interest is certainly the Labor Day weekend. Opening double shot, one of those things that's to be missed for sure. It hasn't stopped you though from getting out and covering very important topics, football related, and you were the driver on both of these things. So where do you want to jump in?
Well, there's two football items that we can talk about. One is the fact that. While there was an awful lot of talk when the MSHSL decided to postpone football season until spring about people transferring, it hasn't actually happened very often. But there are two players from Stuartville who actually did transfer, two very good players, to play in a neighboring state. Josh Burry, a running back with FCS-level Division I offers. And then a lineman named Parker Theobald. They both transferred from Stuartville to Brookings, South Dakota. And so they're the first two that we know definitively of Minnesota players that have decided that it was in their best interest to play football in the fall and not wait till the spring, and have made that step. We've heard rumors of others, but it's hard to confirm. And I know that each state has transfer rules and guidelines in which you have to abide in terms of establishing residency that make it much more difficult. There's another kid at Mankato East who's been, you hear that he's going to transfer, then he's not, then he's going to, then he's not. Right now it seems like it's the possibility is on again that he might be making that transfer. I'm not going to name him, but because he hasn't made a decision. But those are what I'm hearing, that there are some kids that have actually done it. The problem I have with the two kids from South Dakota, from Stuartville to South Dakota, and is that they're not willing to talk about it. I've been reaching out to every avenue I can, every coach, administrator, writer, anybody I know to try to and the kids themselves, and I'm not getting any response. I'm not sure why they're not willing to tell their story or go on record and explain it. I mean, it's kind of a public record. You can't hide. You're not playing anonymous football here. We know that you're on the rosters, and we know the transfers are made. I mean, it seems like if you made the decision for your own reasoning, that is up to you, then own it. Let's tell us about it. You know, I don't think there's any reason to shy away from talking about why you made that decision. No one's going to judge you. I think in this day and age, everybody knows that these circumstances are so odd and unique that it's hard to fault anybody for making a decision they think is in their best interest. So I guess I'm kind of curious as to why the parents and the players and the coaches of these kids are unwilling to go on record and talk about their move. But they did, and so far it seems to be working out for both of them.
Well, they will be judged. Yeah. You know, maybe not by us. I mean, that our work is to just present the information, give them their say. But will they be judged in the court of online public opinion? Yes, because they cease to become football players in that moment. They become pawns in this large divide about where you fit in on the coronavirus spectrum, and it's a very, very divided topic. Which is unfortunate because it affects all of us regardless of your political affiliation and everything else. But yes, they will fall into that. And maybe that's why they're, you know, a little hesitant. I hope it's that. And I hope it's not a case where the kids are sort of along for the ride on this one. You know, that's my hope. My hope is that they actually were excited about this, maybe researched it some. You know, they're the ones that came up with the Brookings for in whatever context they may have had. You hope it's kid driven and kid approved, and not just, my parents who are supposed to love me and look out for me, I'll take their word for it that this is going to all work out right. You hope the kids had some say in this.
No, I agree with you. I don't think that the court of public opinion would be as harsh as it might be, considering the circumstances, because there's still a lot of people that are feeling a little bit raw about not being able to play football. I mean, you hear a lot of people that will understand, and you know, they give lip service to the right way, saying it's all in the name of safety for the kids, but it rubs some people the wrong way. I mean, you see it with college football that there's still people in the Big Ten that are upset and you know, chiding people and putting up protests. And so I think there's people in football that would look at it and I think would understand. But you're right. It does make them kind of a lightning rod for opinions one way or the other. And believe this, nobody is ambivalent. Everybody has an opinion one way or the other. So I can understand why maybe that's why they're hesitant to give it any publicity. The interesting part is why Brookings? That's one thing I'm wondering, because I know 5'9", running back, runs about a 4.5 40. He's a shifty little scat back type, the perfect type of, you know, kind of a wing back, you know, slot back kind of a guy. And it just so happens that South Brookings is in where South Dakota State is based, university. And from what I heard, is that the high school football team plays in a field that is basically in the, you know, a stone's throw away from the SDSU coach John Stiglmeyer's house, and SDSU isn't playing football this fall, so it's a perfect opportunity for them to be, you know, on the stage and kind of trying out for a team like that. I'm not sure if Parker Theobald, the lineman, is at that level, but I do know he's also got at least one offer from Northern State in Aberdeen, South Dakota, and that's, you know, not that far away from where they are either. So that could have something to do with it, that there's a they're going to be on stage in colleges that they have opportunities to play for. But that's just speculation on my part. I can't say for sure.
Well, these are the two football players here and now. We didn't start the blog, I guess, until the middle of last month. So I don't remember if we got into this or not, but I had written about a certified star football player, Dorian Singer from Tartan, who left to transfer to a high school in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And he said it was for him, it was about the recognition concerns. He said he was the only three-star receiver from the Midwest without a Power 5 conference offer, even though he had 13 Division I offers at this time in mid-July. So that was a big motivator for him. He was off to a high school in Phoenix called Pinnacle. Well, and not long after that, Michael Olowo, if I hope I'm pronouncing that young man's name correctly,
from Rogers,
announced he was going to Pinnacle And, you know, with all due respect, Michael didn't have quite the same credentials as a high school player that, that Dorian had assembled for himself to this point. I'm sure Michael's a fine player and, you know, brings a lot to a team. But so now you have these two guys, skill position guys, you know, leaving not just Minnesota for Arizona, but for a very specific high school in Arizona. That was interesting to me, this little pipeline that suddenly formed.
You know, and they both transferred. I guess you could indirectly attribute their transfers to the COVID pandemic, because Dorian talked about not getting the exposure that he'd hoped. And because of that pandemic, a lot of the camps and combines and individual workouts and all the things that go into off-season recruiting and the things that are very important to off-season recruiting were canceled this year. So a lot of them, out of these kids, had an entire recruiting season taken away from them. So they weren't getting the exposure they wanted. And with the Minnesota season still up in the air when they both transferred, I think they probably looked at it and said, hey, you know, we're not going to get a chance to show our stuff to anybody if we don't do this now. So I can understand the reasoning. It's not directly attributed to the Minnesota's high school league's decision to postpone the season, but it is an indirect byproduct of it. There was another high-level defensive back from Minnesota that transferred as well, but he did that last – it might have been right at the end of last football season, SMB, a kid named Trayvon Howard, who I think transferred down last winter to IMG Academy in Florida. So we have lost a few top football players to transfers for better exposure, and it's kind of following a trend that you've seen in basketball and hockey and other sports for a long time.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's you can point to it in every sport, and you hope it works out for them. You know, you hope it works out for all of them that leave. Whatever your opinion is on whether or not kids need to worry about accelerating their progress or whatever their motivations might be.
Well, you've got a daughter, Dave. She's going to be in the college age soon. You know, college education costs are nothing to sneeze at. I mean, I know that people scoff frequently at the idea of earning a scholarship, and you see these numbers that the various federations and high school leagues put out about how many kids actually get a scholarship. But if you do have that chance and you are a kid on that scholarship pipeline, you want to make sure you cement those that reputation as much as you can, because college costs are so prohibitive these days. I don't blame people for taking those sorts of steps. I really don't.
So you covered players leaving. We've covered players leaving. We've covered football that isn't happening, but you've also got some, you had a blog today, a really interesting blog on five student athletes who attended Minnesota high school who are in Minnesota and are playing football. So they're in the minority of minorities as things go this fall. Enlighten us, please.
So I tentatively, no, we don't know everybody, but I tentatively thought that they might be the only five players from Minnesota that are enrolled at a Minnesota high school that are actually playing football. They're in Campbell Tinta, a tiny school on the western edge of Minnesota, about 60-some students, grades 7 through 12, that has a cooperative agreement, a tri-state cooperative agreement with Fairmount, North Dakota, and Ross Holt, South Dakota. It's called the Tri-State Tigers, and they play in the North Dakota High School Athletic Association, so under that umbrella. And they've already played two games. And there's five players from Minnesota, three seniors. I think it's Tate Freeberg, and all the names escape me. But and they're the only that I know of that have actually played a high school football game this year and are enrolled in a Minnesota school. Now, they haven't actually began schooling yet. I think they begin next week. So they have played two games already. The team, the Tri-State Tigers, are 1-1. And they talked about how they were nervous that North Dakota was going to cancel high school football, or at least postpone it, and how thrilled or stoked, as one of the players told me, then they found out that they were going to get to play. They also said that a lot of them know Minnesota players. One of the kids I talked to actually grew up in Wheaton, which isn't too far away. and knew a lot of kids there before he moved to Campbell Tinta. And he knew that how bummed they were that they weren't going to get a chance to play. So, yeah, it's interesting. There are some kids out there playing football, just that go to a Minnesota school. There are a few other schools that have the possibility. There's a cooperative named, I think it's Esteline Hendricks in South Dakota. Esteline, South Dakota, and Hendricks is Minnesota. I'm sure that there's some football players on that co-op as well. However, that team hasn't played a game yet because they had their first two games postponed. Actually, I think canceled due to a couple of COVID positive tests. So at this point, and somebody can correct me, I'd love to hear it. I'd love to know if somebody else is out doing this. They're the only Minnesota kids I know of that are actually playing football this fall that are still enrolled in Minnesota.
Well, the easy way, of course, anytime you write something like that is the magical phrase, believed to be.
Believed to be.
That's your legal disclaimer. You wrote everything you could based on what you knew at that time. At the time I wrote it, I believed this to be correct. And if you want to enlighten us, we'll change it. That's the beauty of believed to be.
You know, and the great thing about this story is it's, you know, you've got three different things you can, you know, focus on. Three states, one team. That's pretty, I haven't heard of that before. I've heard that's probably happened once or twice, but that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You've got the kids playing football from a state that's postponed football, and the coach, Fernando Reese, and this northwestern Minnesota, eastern North Dakota and South Dakota prairie land, farmland out there. He grew up in Lexington, Mississippi, played college football at Arkansas Pine Bluff. How he ended up in this area, he doesn't know how he ended up there. I know he was playing some semi-pro football for a team in Fargo a few years back. And he just kind of, you know, stayed in the area and lives in Wahpeton. And now he and a few of his other former players, it looks like, from that Fargo team are coaching the Tri-State Tigers. So it's a really, really interesting team. He said he knew nothing about nine-man football until he joined the coaching staff there 3 years ago. He had 1 year as a defensive coordinator, 2 years now as a head coach. So it's there's a good story just about anywhere you look. You just have to, you know, be willing to dig a little bit. So,
yeah. On that note, should I tease what we've got coming for Sunday? Is this the right time to do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we had this idea that the absence of football was an opportunity to really amplify its importance around the state and the communities. And so we had this idea that let's take that concept and let's bring it to greater Minnesota. And let's get a snapshot of what Friday night would have looked like in towns in outside of the metro in greater Minnesota. And we chose from the list of last year's Prep Bowl champions, we ended up choosing Blooming Prairie, which was the single A champ. And then Ricori, which is located in Cold Spring. And that was a 4A champion. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So he'll be heading to Ricori on Thursday because that was supposed to be their home opener. And I'll be heading to Blooming Prairie on Friday, which was going to be their home opener, to provide that snapshot of football and what's being missed on these nights when there won't be football stadium lights blazing.
Well, I will have to make one small correction there. We had to fudge it a little bit. Ricori, I think, would have been starting the season at Fergus Falls on Thursday.
Oh, okay.
But because, you know, we wanted to look and see what's going to Ricori, and it's still a Friday night, I can work around that because there's still excitement anytime you're around a team. And, you know, when you're in class during the day and all the kids wear their jerseys. And I remember when I played football, I never thought about class. And, you know, woe be to me if I had a big test on a Friday of a football game because your thoughts were always somewhere else. And, you know, the community knows there's going to be no football in Ricori. And that's a very, very strong athletic school, Ricori is. They've been good. They're good in just about anything they do, the basketball and baseball and football and their sports. And they've had some big games come out of there. You've all heard of Eric Decker. He was a Ricori football player. So. And then you're going to Blooming Prairie, and that was a team that I think everybody thought they were going to lose in the Prep Bowl last year to Bold, which is a team that I think was not, we thought was going to roll over them. And Blooming Prairie just finished up an undefeated season and manhandled them in that game. That was a heck of a coming out party for the Awesome Blossoms. They were truly awesome in that game.
I was talking to somebody down there doing some interviews ahead of time, and I had to go back and try to figure out when they played in the Prep Bowl, because it's a 2-day event, of course. And so when I found the note that said that they played at 10 a.m. on Friday, it was connected to our picks segment in which both of us picked Bold to win.
Yes.
So it shows what we know.
Well, you know what? Bold had a couple of players, including a quarterback who's also been a pitcher that I think pitched a no-hitter in the state championship baseball game the spring before. And so, and they were undefeated and had some really talented athletes, and they had been ranked pretty highly all the season long. I think I just assumed Bold was going to take care of Blooming Prairie, who I think was making their first appearance in the Prep Bowl. But Blooming Prairie was impressive. You know, they were physical and they were strong, and they could throw the ball more better than people remember. And they had a big kid, a big tight end linebacker type who was a dominant player on the field. His name escapes me now, but I remember that game distinctly, watching Bold. Didn't play like underdogs at all. They played like they belonged, and they really proved it in that game. And then Ricori, they were going up against SMB and all their superstars, and they pulled it out in the second half. I think got a 2-point conversion to win the game. And when their quarterback, you know, threw a strike, who wasn't known as a throwing quarterback at all, rolled out and threw a strike just under the hands of a defensive back. You may have heard of him, Jalen Suggs, and into the arms of one of his receivers. And so that was about as exciting as possible.
And yeah, so, yeah. When you go right at, you know, the man child and you beat him by, like you said, by about a fingernail width of space, they got that ball in. It was a pretty remarkable finish.
That was one of those ones where you know that you've got that no cheering in the press box rule, but you can't help it. I mean, there's a lot of yells. Doesn't necessarily mean there's a bias, but it's like, oh my goodness, did you see that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's not about cheering for a team. It's the moment is incredible. Absolutely. It's however, you know, it wasn't incredible that, you know, I mean, and it was more incredible that they made the play to beat Suggs, because that you hadn't seen that happen much. And
I remember going to Minnehaha Academy. I remember going to Minnehaha Academy to interview players for their basketball team, which got a lot of notoriety as well. I went to talk to Jalen, and he was still moping around. I mentioned the football team, and he kind of mumbled a few words that game. And I asked about it, and he didn't. He just shook his head and looked away. I thought, well, there you go. You just ruined your communication and any sort of bond you had with Jalen Suggs by bringing that up again. So you can tell that was really, really on his mind. That's how big that was. So, and it was just that moment where I don't think anybody gave Ricori much of a chance. I think they'd actually had 2 losses at that point, if I'm not mistaken. But that was one memorable football game. It certainly was.
I've talked to some of the Blooming Prairie folks. I'm excited to go there Friday, but I got to say I'm a little disappointed, because they had a really, really good bakery that burned down back in January. So I'll be out of luck when it comes to getting some really good pastries in town.
Well, you know what? When I was doing previews before the game, and somebody had shot me an email and said something about mentioning Blooming Prairie, and don't forget to check out the bakery in Blooming Prairie and how everybody loved it and how award-winning it was. And then to hear it burn down, what a loss for that community. That's, I mean, anytime you lose treats like that, how terrible. Hopefully they're looking at rebuilding that thing, because that was a landmark. That was something that you just don't replace.
Yep, for sure. For sure. And you don't replace Football Fridays, but in the South Suburban, they are looking to at least give people another option. I believe this Friday, if I'm not mistaken, and this is where producer Paul Clauda weighs in to tell us a little bit about what the South Suburban Conference has up its sleeve for Soccer Friday.
Yeah, thanks, David. I am pinch hitting for Ron Hagstrom, who's actually trying to write a story advancing what that night's going to be like, but it does sound like there will be soccer games played at football stadiums on Friday night, in the void of football that you've been describing. And it looks to be a one-time thing from what he's been able to figure out. And it might have something to do with what it took to reschedule some games from that had originally been planned to be played later in the season when the season was going to be a little bit longer and before the COVID thing kind of prompted the high school league to pare the season back. So the games that would have been at the end of the season, some of them are going to be played in the first part of the season, including Friday night, where they will be playing soccer under the lights where you'd normally expect to see those football players. Or as Ron said, instead of football, it'll be football.
That's right. That's right.
And there's very only going to be, there's only going to be, they're still going to allow very few fans. I mean, they've got their limits. So it's not going to be packing them in. I think 250 is the max. But you said there's some schools that are anticipating at least reaching their max limit for fans allowed?
That's right. Ron mentioned the Lakeville South, Lakeville North battle. They're actually playing twice. They're playing on Wednesday night, and then they're going to play again on Friday. And I think the
game, there's going to be some bad blood Friday.
The Friday night will be at Lakeville. He said the
home and home.
The 250 limit for fans and or people at the stadium had already been reached. So I don't know if that's the case for Wednesday night, but hey, it's Friday night. You know, people like to get out and go see high school teams. So here we go.
But you have to get there early if you want to be one of the lucky 250, because you're not going to pack them in. Dave, you had a great line when we were talking about this. What did you call it, since it won't be packing them in? Friday night light, L-I-T-E.
Yeah. L-I-T-E, yeah. That's a cheap shot. That's all that is.
No, that was witty. That was a spur of the moment. Oh, thanks. Well, I think we're, you know, getting about close to our time limit here, are we not, Paul?
I think so, unless you got some other pearls of wisdom you want to share.
No, that would never be me.
David? Yeah, time aside, I just think we're out of topics for the time being. So I think we're in good shape here to wrap it up. And we'll look forward to next week when we can have our impressions from our visits to Blooming Prairie and to Ricori. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say that package, that story package we're talking about here and so shamelessly promoting, that will be available in Sunday's Star Tribune. So be sure to check out not only the words, which I'm sure will be rich, but the photography, which promises to be great and a nice window into places in Minnesota maybe the average metro area reader doesn't get to. So I think it'll be well worth your Sunday morning read.
Thanks for being with us.